You know, we had our update, if you've listened to it, about the MMO and that whole situation. If you haven't listened to it, go get updated. but what the energy and the emotion Etch and I have during that update is because of things like this. This is the paint we talked about. It's great paint.
It's great paint. You could have slapped it on a Honda Civic and I'd be happy.
Welcome to
I can't count.
Welcome to Casuals of Runeterra, episode 148. I'm your host Ryan, here with your other host Hetch.
Yeah, today we're gonna have a, you know, we're gonna have a breakaway. We're gonna talk about Sesame Street so that Ryan can watch the count.
God damn it. So today we're talking about someone who's not in the game, because remember, we've shifted how we pick characters, but someone we've wanted to talk about for a while, because it's a concept that has existed in fantasy for a very long time. We're talking about Orianna today in our episode, Ghost in the Shell.
Let's go. Yeah, but before we get there, even though the Legends of Runeterra is dead and our format's changing, there's one thing that will never change, and that's housekeeping. It's up top.
It's up top, yeah. You can listen to us everywhere. Visit us at podcastcore.com for all of our info. Email us at podcastcore@gmail.com. Remember, that's C-O-R. Follow us on all the platforms because that helps with discoverability. We appreciate it. And then leave a like and comment wherever you listen. And word of mouth has gotten us so far. So tell a friend to discover the Ghost in the Shell by listening to the Casuals of Runeterra podcast.
Yeah, that's right. And so Ghost in the Shell is an anime that was released. Oh, wait, no, that's not
wrong episode. Wrong episode.
Wrong show.
Wrong show. Yeah. Yeah. So Ghost in the Shell is the easiest reference here, because it deals with the concept of what is a soul, what does it mean to be a human, what is identity, and how immutable is that?
Yeah, and especially with the more that we've been seeing in, like, our current pop media, the more that we've been seeing that cyberpunk feel to storytelling, like, this is, you know, this is a good time as far as diving into Orianna. And that's totally why we picked this champion, and we didn't pick it because that used to be one of my main characters, and I've been itching to talk about her forever, and she never got added to Runeterra.
Yeah,
that's totally not the reason that we're talking about it today. but on that note, let's dive into Orianna's bio. All right. So as far as, like, if again, like, since she wasn't in the game, but Orianna is from Piltover, specifically Piltover. And as far as her growing up, she was known. She was Orianna Revic, and she grew up with her father, Corin Revic, and they ran a an artificer shop on the streets of Piltover. So relatively, you know, doing pretty well for themselves. I think, like, the best way to kind of dive into, like, what their lives were like is they would kind of be more like the middle class of Piltover. So this isn't like the situation with, like, Caitlin being highborn or Jace coming out of the gutters because of his intelligence. Like, this Orianna's in the middle of those two.
This reminds me of, and I don't know if we've mentioned this about Piltover, but when you think about like the abundance of in China or Eastern countries of, like, street vendors, where there's so many different types, right, of food vendors, and Piltover's like that, but for, like, automation and for, like, limbs and for artificery. And I don't even know, is that a word? Am I that good? Wait.
Hey, if it's anything like when we talk about names on this show, it's a word now. Right? Stay tuned. Keep in touch with our, you know, with podcastcore.com for when we release our dictionary. Webster's Casual Dictionary.
But But yeah, Piltover streets are filled with people who tinker and families who tinker. So this is makes sense. This makes sense. Yeah.
And so like this would be a shop very similar to like a champion we have covered, Seraphine. Like Seraphine's family would be, you know, a shop that is on the street front, just like Oriana and her father Corin's shop. And as far as their shop, though, they mainly worked with prosthetics. Mm-hmm. So, because again, like, you know, that we're talking about a boom of like hex tech and everything. So, like, everyone has like their own specialized shop. So, this is a prosthetic shop. And as far as Oriana as a child, she had a very adventurous spirit, but Corin, her father, was always afraid of her safety. And now that we're diving into this part of the bio, mom's not in the picture. We don't know what happened to mom, but she's not in the picture. So Corin is a single
dad.
Shout
out to single dads.
Yeah, and he's just trying to do what's best for Oriana. And for him, you know, it's like he tries to keep her very close, keep her safe. And Oriana spends a lot of her time as far as tinkering with the automation that they do for the prosthetics. And she does like to dance. So she's, from the writing, it looks like she's into ballet. And a lot of the tinkering that she does within the shop is making figures that do a lot of the ballet dances. So moves like pirouettes and leaps. And otherwise, she's kind of sheltered. And that leads us to a disaster that happens in Zaun. Mm-hmm. So this isn't the first time we've talked about, like, you know, kind of bad things happening in Zaun that kind of spill over into Piltover, right? Because, again, with the amount of chemtech that's going on down there, explosions tend to happen. And this...
And conceptually, it's a concept I appreciate because it reinforces the factor that we always reinforce. That you don't have a Piltover without Zaun, right? They're one and the same. So therefore, whatever affects one affects the other. And that should never be separated because conceptually, the goal is to make them one completely.
Yep. Yeah. And again, to kind of lean back into Seraphine's story, once we have this disaster, there was an explosion that ended up causing a chemical leak, and a lot of noxious fumes are going out of Zaun and actually bleeding over into Piltover. And much like Seraphine, Oriana's like, we need to help them.
Yeah.
But Corin, her father, has been protecting her all of her life, and he's not like forbids her from leaving the shop, forbids her from going to Zaun. But that's not good enough for Oriana, so she packs up as many supplies as she can get her hands on and goes down into Zaun to help as many people as she can. Because despite the fact that they work on prosthetics, which would be helpful for anyone that got maimed in the initial explosion, they use technology that is in the gas masks or the rebreathers that are constructed for the Zaunites. So she goes down there as far as just trying to help as many people as she can. And her father, like, once she comes back from doing as much work as she can down in Zaun, with that, like, that we don't get a lot of details of who all she helps.
Yeah.
We don't know what that is like, and we don't know how long she's down there. But she does go, she does help, comes back, and her father's furious with her, forbids her from leaving, basically grounds her. But before he can finish grounding her, she passes out. Yeah. Because it turns out that noxious fumes are just as deadly to Piltovans as they are to Zaunites.
Mm-hmm.
Shocker. It's like if your city's divided in two, the inhabitants are still all human.
Yeah.
So she collapses. And her father immediately gets to work figuring out what's going on. And unfortunately, with the noxious fumes that she inhaled, it ended up causing irreparable damage to her lungs.
Yeah.
So now Corin ends up pouring all the resources and all of his savings that he has into not only keeping Oriana alive, but to keep her alive long enough to create a set of iron lungs.
Yeah.
And then operates on her himself to take her damaged lungs out and put these new iron lungs in. And in a moment of, you know, in his mind, a moment of brilliance, he decides to have the lungs be kind of on a wind up. So like if you've ever played with a child's toy where you have to wind it up and then it will go for a set amount of time. That's what he does with the lungs, and the key to wind up her lungs, he keeps under lock and key. So that way it's like, haha, Oriana can't leave anymore, because if she leaves without the key, she dies.
Yeah.
That's so
it's a bit twisted.
She's now a prisoner.
It has like a dark original Pinocchio story style to it, right? Which I definitely think is inspired. By the way, this is written by, and I'm going to, once again, once we say it, that's the name, Ryla Heed. Her last name can be said a million different ways, and that's the one that just kind of came to my mind. But,
well, it can be said as Heed, therefore it's Heed.
Yeah, therefore it is Heed.
You're welcome, Ryla.
Yeah, and their inspiration could definitely be a Pinocchio-esque as we continue through this story.
Yeah. So as far as, like, you know, if you're just – if we had stopped there, it's kind of like, okay, cool. Like, Oriana's safe.
You short did story,
it, Corin. But it turns out the story keeps going, unfortunately, the poison is not gone. Like, Corin has been able to replace her lungs, but he's not dealt with the root cause, and the poison continues to go through her body and just ravaging all of her vital organs. So throughout, over a period of years, essentially, Corin is constantly creating new artificial organs and taking organs out of Oriana to replace them the further the poison spreads.
Yeah.
And this ends up leading to a point where it leads to a point where, like, the amount of resources that they've had to put into keeping Oriana alive essentially bankrupts Corin, and now they have to move to Zaun. Yeah. So they give up their status as Piltovans, sell everything, go to Zaun. They do reopen a shop in Zaun, which would essentially be a very similar shop to what they had, with just significantly less resources and backing.
Yeah.
And they run the shop in Zaun, which is essentially just to try to get as much money as they can to continue making new organs for Oriana as her body continues to degrade. And it is from this point on that for Oriana, once it's written as, like, once they get to Zaun, that it's like for her, the humanity part is starting to fade away. So for her, it feels like time is beginning to slow down.
Yeah.
And it makes sense that time's slowing down, because she doesn't have to worry about a mortal body anymore. Yep. Because the deeper the poison spreads, the less human she becomes.
I can't help but think, you know, a very dark analogy here, but I think everyone has dealt with it in some capacity, is cancer. And what cancer does to not just the human body at different critical points, but also spirit. You hear plenty of stories, whether personal or from others, about the process of chemo and the process of going through battling any stage of cancer and the value in that. And on the other end, who you are. A lot of people come out very changed, not only physically, but mentally when battling cancer. And I immediately touched on that reading this as well. Like we said, this is very well written. And this concept alone, you know, we started off with Ghost in the Shell, but it's applicable to so many things, which makes it so good, right? It's such a human story in a way, even though we're talking about someone losing their humanity.
Yeah. And as far as, like, the way that it is human is where the story leads when we get to Zaun. And it's because from this point on, like, Corin is trying to make ends meet and try to get as much money in as he can to continue saving Oriana. And the further the enhancements go, the less human she's becoming. She is now very proficient at all the work that Corin does for the shop. She is now at a point where she's kind of like taking over for the shop, because she's so efficient, because she has less human needs now.
Yeah.
And, like, on her free time, she's just mass producing the figurines that she made as a child. trying to remember the joy that she had when she was initially making them, because it was, you know, an expression of what she wanted to do. And now it's just like, oh, I'm good at making these. I make a lot of these. I sell these. I make more. And it is now robotic for her. And this is, they're kind of now like balancing out, but, you know, unfortunately, being in Zaun and having less resources, now Corin starts to fall sick, breathing in all of the chem tech that's around, because they don't have the money for respirators for him, because all the money's going into Orianna. And when he begins to fall ill, Orianna realizes that she's not going to have enough money just selling her figurines. So she does what all Zaunites do when their back is against the wall financially. And she goes to a Kim Baron to try to find assistance to get enough money or resources to try to save her father.
Yeah.
And she is able to track down a Kim Baron who is able to provide her with a Hextech crystal.
Ding, 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 she ding, doesn't, ding, ding.
If, you,
ding,
if you're ding, a long-time listener, you know there's nothing good that can come of this.
Especially if it's a Kim Baron that's giving you a Hextech crystal. And it's funny because it's even written that she does not question where he got it from.
Yeah.
And that is not smart.
Off the back of a truck.
So she doesn't question where he got it from. She doesn't question how he got it.
Yeah.
But she knows that the next time she sees a Kim Baron, her debt is going to have to be paid, and she can't pay it. So once she gets in possession of this Hextech crystal, with this part of the story, Corin needs some new organs. Orianna is now to the point where her heart is beginning to fail.
Yeah.
And the organs that Corin needs is a heart as well. But it's like, hey, before the poison spreads to my heart, he needs a heart. I can go ahead and just make a heart for me and put my heart into him. So she spends weeks figuring out how to create her new Hextech heart, how to figure out how to extract her heart to do the surgery on him, is finally able to get everything figured out, puts him on anesthesia, performs the operation, and now Corin has Orianna's heart, and Orianna has created her clockwork globe, which is her heart. And for anyone who's played League of Legends, you know exactly what that is, because you've probably seen it fly out of a bush and then hit R, and your HP is suddenly 80% less than what it was, and two auto attacks kill you. We've all been there. It's okay. It's okay. but it is now that she has fully become robotic. All the last piece of her that was human is now inside of her father. And she is, one of the last human thoughts that she has is that she's content knowing that there will always be a piece of her left with him. And
amazing.
She ends up packing up everything and getting the hell out of Dodge because she knows that she can't pay the Kim Baron.
Yeah.
But they're going to be looking for her, not for her dad. And she ends up leaving, finds the key. Well, you know, gets the key from Corin's safe for her lungs, is able to wind herself up with her clockwork orb. And she heads on out, basically to never be seen again. And Corin ends up making a full recovery into a shop that is completely surrounded by the figurines that Orianna used to make. And that's where our story leaves off.
Dude, this is one of those stories where we've had a couple of these over the years we've been recording these episodes that it's always so impressive. And this is why we give so much credence to writers and the work they do on something that would be considered just, you know, random lore for a character that's older or whatever. But there's so much here. It's such a strong story. The narrative is nice and tight. It has a lot of foundation to it. And the stuff you can do after it with the character are just endless. And even to the point where, you know, the sub theme of automation and what automation does to creativity, right? We having that be a major part of this very short story is important because it fits very well. And it's very well expressed on what it does to Oriana as she's losing her humanity and also noticing she's losing the part that connects her to the work she does and what that work means after it's done. So it doesn't matter now you have 100 when you would have had 10, but it doesn't feel right, right? Because they're supposed to be creative pieces that are made from the heart, quote unquote.
Right. Like, yeah. It all started as an expression of her creativity. And the more robotic she became, the more that it was less about the creativity and more about the production. So, yeah. As far as when Corin wakes up, there's only one piece that's different from the rest of them. And he swears that that's the one that he will never sell. But, like, Oriana left all there so that he could sell them to take care of himself. Like, that's like the last ditch of her humanity was like, okay, I know you're taken care of now. And it's very interesting to see as far as the automation and the loss of humanity within the tales of P and Z. Mm-hmm. Through Oriana's eyes, because we've only really talked about that through Victor's eyes.
Yep.
Victor looks at it from a completely different angle. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, he was probably looking at like the 10 pirouetting figurines that were created from, you know, a girl trying to express what she wanted to be able to do with her body.
Yeah.
Probably looked at that and went, the human mind is so weak. You know what I mean? Like, Victor is like, the flesh is weakness, whereas Oriana like was still able to kind of hold on to it until the end. Like, it was the further along she got, the more cold and calculating she became. Yeah. But even within that cold calculation, she was still able to make an exit that would not jeopardize her father.
Yeah.
So it's a very different lens to look at it, and which is impressive to do from a storytelling element, because it's a lot easier to just be like, yeah, if you know, in P and Z, if you have any kind of augmentation, you're with the Great Revolution. Like that's an easy cop out. But life isn't always black and white. There's a lot of gray areas in there, and Oriana kind of highlights those gray areas.
Yeah, great, Rayla, good job. Good job. Because, I mean, even the daughter of a single father leaving her heart with him as she has to leave. That is like, dude, what? This is, you know, we had our update, if you listened to it, about the MMO and that whole situation. If you haven't listened to it, go get updated. but what the energy and the emotion Etch and I have during that update is because of things like this. This is the paint we talked about. It's great paint.
It's great paint. You could have slapped it on a Honda Civic and I'd be happy. But I mean, like, you know, to that note, this is why we started the show. Like, this, the world of Runeterra is incredible. Absolutely incredible. And there are so many characters in it, and each one is able to feel like a new twist on something. Because we've been saying Ghost in the Shell for 20 minutes now.
Yeah, let's go ahead. let's go ahead and talk about it.
Like, this isn't a unique storyline, but it's a unique twist to a storyline that's been used in fictional stories for a long time. I mean, for the entirety of our lives. So it's nice to have like that new twist on it. And I know I'm becoming an old man when, you know, we're talking about a daughter, you know, giving her heart to the single father.
Yeah.
And I'm like getting choked up and I don't even have kids. I'm an old man.
Yeah. One thing I like to say a lot, and, you know, feel free to quote me on it, is you don't have to reinvent the wheel, but it's all right to put your own spin on it. Right. And this is, you know, we've talked about Ghost of Shell, like you said, a million times. And what that references is the Ship of Theseus, which is a philosophy that's been around forever, especially it's Western philosophy mainly. And the gist of it is that if you have a ship and over time parts of the ship wears down and you have to change it plank by plank until at some point every plank on that ship is new. Everything on that ship is new, but it's still the same ship. Or is it, right? that's the philosophy question, is at what point does it stop being the ship of Theseus as you make changes, as you modify, and as you take away what was once there to repair what is still the ship? And that's where you get the influence in a lot of fantasy, a lot of sci-fi based on this concept that has done very well. It's a philosophy that appeals to a lot of people because of everything we've said in the last 20 minutes.
Yep. And I can't say anything better than what you just said of, you don't have to reinvent the wheel, but you can put your own spin on it. This is a great story that is putting its own spin on that ghost in the shell, or the ship of Theseus, mm-hmm. right? Like it is its own spin, and it's a very enjoyable story that we were able to, you know, sit down and talk about for an extended period of time. And there's a lot of Champion episodes that we have covered that kind of fall in that vein. I mean, yeah. Like, look at Vladimir. Like, look, there's nothing unique about Vladimir.
Yeah.
Like, if you've ever heard a vampire story, you're going to pick up on pieces of his story, right?
Yeah.
But he is still Vladimir. Like, he is Runeterra's Vladimir. And there are things that separate him from other vampire stories. And that's fine. It doesn't always have to be overtly different. It just needs to be unique enough to fit within the overall world, and that's what brings life to that world.
Perfect.
And that's why we have this show, is because that world's great. Keep giving us more of it.
Yeah, we're gonna keep talking about this paint, but for now, thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon with the next episode.
Yeah, take care, everybody.